Welcome back to the second hour of Better Lawns and Gardens. We'd love to wish everyone out there who is celebrating Passover, happy Passover, and happy Easter this weekend. If you're on the road driving, we would love for you to just drive safe, take care, and arrive alive there. So be very, very careful. We have a great show for you. We're going to be taking your gardening questions this morning, 1-888-455-2967, or your text messages like Mike and Lori and April and Tom. So we've been enjoying that. But now it's time for the dirty word of the day.
And now it's time for the dirty word of the day on Better Lawns and Gardens with Teresa Watkins.
And the dirty word of the day pertains to Easter lilies especially, and it's anther, A-N-T-H-E-R. The anther plays an essential role in the stamen, which is the flower's male reproductive organ. You'll often find it perched atop a slender filament, which is a slight stem. Both the anther and the filament make up what is known as the stamen. The anther produces and disperses pollen, a crucial step in fertilizing plants. When pollen moves from the anther to the stigma, the female flower portion, it triggers fertilization, resulting in seed and fruit development. Anthers come in various sizes and shapes, and they generally have the same basic structure. They are consisting of pollen sacs. Each anther has two lobes, with each lobe containing two pollen sacs, for a total of four pollen sacs per anther. The connective tissue between the lobes holds the lobe together and attaches them to the filament. So when you're looking at the Easter lily or Asiatic lilies, the stamen's coming up with the big, bright, yellow pollen. That is the anther right there on the stamen. Anthers can vary in different plant species in size and shape. Some are small and round, while others are long and slender. If they are attached at a single point, allowing the anther to swing freely like grass species, they are called versatile anthers. In Easter lilies, anthers are attached at the base of the filament and are described as basally fixed. In roses, dorsifixed anthers are attached at the back of the filament, usually immobile. Adnate anthers are entirely attached to the filament along their length, found in many orchids. Anthers also have adapted interesting ways to make sure they're pollinated. Some anthers produce sticky pollen that adheres easily to pollinators. Others, like the oxalis, have anthers that explode to disperse pollen. In some species, anthers emit fragrances to attract special pollinators. Anthers are a crucial part in plant breeding and hybridization. By controlling the pollen from anther, breeders can create hybrids to combine desirable traits, improve crop yields by developing new plant varieties that are more productive and resilient, and introduce traits like disease resistant, drought tolerance, and improved nutritional content. The anther of a flower might seem like a small and an insignificant part, but it plays a crucial role in the life cycle of plants. By producing and releasing pollen, anthers enable the process of pollination, which is essential for plant reproduction and biodiversity. Next week, I'll tell you more about pollen.
There you go.
And so we are taking your phone calls, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. And so we have lots of what to do in your backyard starting this month. You don't want to miss this. But I want to get to Will Hollyhocks. This is HR in Jacksonville. Will hollyhocks grow in Northeast Florida? Yes, they will. Hollyhocks do very well in North Florida as a perennial, and they do well here in Central Florida and South Florida as annuals. You want to start the seeds in September, though, HR, and allow them to establish before the heat of the summertime. They're often grown as annuals just to avoid the hot and humid summers. They don't do well in humidity. They're easier to grow as perennials. So you can get them, start them in September, let them flower through wintertime, and then they will go back down, and they should come back for you, especially in Jacksonville. So that's a great text question. Also to April, we got a text message from April in April, and she has 7 gardenia plants in her yard, and some are flourishing and some are dead, which is not freeze related. They were planted a year ago. How often should we water and fertilize? And does the ground cover matter? We have mulch. Thank you. So, April, that's a great question. Gardenias are starting off right now. There's lots of them blooming in the springtime. They love acidic soil. So you want to have a pH of 4.5 to 5.5 pH. And then you can use Espoma, a soil acidifier, to put into your soil that will help you get that acidity down. And then also, too, they do like mulch. Watering should be once to twice a week. Twice a week during the summertime is fine. And then also, too, fertilizing with that acidic fertilizer, with an azalea fertilizer or a gardenia fertilizer, will be great. They love full sun or shade. They will do well. You just want to make sure you have good air circulation and consistency. Don't plant them too close together. Don't plant them too close to the house. And depending on what variety, they can grow anywhere from 2 feet tall to 8 to 10 feet tall. I've seen beautiful gardenia hedges at 10 feet tall. And so they do very well here. So I would just make sure you're consistently watering, that they have an acidity of 4.5 to 5.5, and they have full sun, good air circulation, and fertilized on a regular basis with acidic fertilizer. So April, they should do well for you then. So make sure you're not planting them too deep. You want to see the flare at the bottom of the shrub or tree. And if you still have problems, you can always send to me photographs, and I'd love to do that. Jeff in Davenport is asking about fig trees. We're going to talk about that when we get back, and we're going to get your gardening questions, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680, and we will love to hear from you. I want to wish everyone a happy Passover, a happy Easter this Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Need to...
Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. In April's newsletter this month, I really hesitant since it's just out, about what to do with a landscape malpractice. It was a very big landscape malpractice. What I'm going to do is I'm going to put it on the newsletter. I'm not going to announce it.
Okay.
What the issue was, but you'll have to go and read it. Landscape malpractice. Wasn't that strange?
Yeah, it caught me off guard. I would have stood there for probably a couple of days just staring at it going, what?
Yeah, what's going on here? I did. I looked at it for several days before I went over to it, but I will upload and post the problem with the landscape malpractice on our in our newsletter there, so you can check that out. So Jeff is he is in Davenport, and his fig tree was frozen, and it looks dead, only brown leaves, and he hoped, yes, figs do very well here in Florida, Jeff. They can handle temperatures down to 18 degrees, but they will drop their leaves. They go dormant in the wintertime. So that's probably what you're seeing is your fig tree is just gone dormant. It will recover no problem whatsoever. And so the University of Florida and myself, I grow brown turkey figs and put those in clients who are, I'm using edible landscaping for. So Celeste and brown turkey and Ischia are the varieties that are recommended here for Florida. And that's Ischia, I-S-C-H-I-A. So those are the varieties, brown turkey and also Celeste, and your fig tree is going to recover just fine. Yay. So I was interested. We get a lot, Lizzie, of listeners all over the world. This week it's Malaysia. We have a large influx of Malaysia listeners downloading the podcast.
Excellent.
And China and Russia and Germany and Australia, New Zealand. And so I just wanted to compare. And so when you're listening overseas and you're hearing us talk about what to do in your landscape, well, all the way around the world, on in our hemisphere and in other hemispheres, we have the same global climate mm-hmm. as they do. So I'm just going to shout out some of the countries and what their zones comparable to Florida are. So the United Kingdom, Great Britain, the closest to Florida is the South Coast, their gardening zone 9A to 9B, Cornwall, and Sicily, the Scilly Islands, they are 9B to 10A. And then London is an urban heat island, 9A to 9B. So London gardening is similar, conditions is similar to Florida.
Really? See, I've never been to London, but just what I've seen on TV and whatnot, I would have thought it would have been cooler.
Yeah, no. Well, but actually, they grow palm trees there.
Oh,
so and in Ireland and in Scotland, too. So there are some areas that have little microclimates. So in Canada, the closest to the Florida climate is southern British Columbia coast and Vancouver Island, which are zones 8A to 9A. And then in Australia, well, I'm just going to tell you, Australia, Queensland, both the central and southeast, coastal New South Wales, Sydney, and then southern Victoria, Melbourne, Tasmania, Adelaide, Perth, southwest Wales, and then central Australia, they're all 8 to 12B. So everything that we grow here in Florida will grow in Australia. And so I'm very excited about that. New Zealand, the whole Northland, Auckland, Bay of Plenty, East Coast, and Wellington are 9A to 10A. And then also to the West Coast, and then Nelson and Marlborough are 8B and 9A. In Germany, we don't have anything similar in Germany. So they are, you can tell they're much, much colder than we are. But the Netherlands, the coastal area, southern Netherlands, and the urban areas of Amsterdam and Rotterdam are 8A to 8B. So that would be northern Florida. In France, northern France, the Paris Basin and Brittany, the Atlantic coast, the Rhone Valley, and the Mediterranean coast, Provence and Corsica are all 8A to 9B, and even the Mediterranean coast is 10A. And then the last one is Belgium, Flanders, the coastal Flanders is 8A to 8B. So if you're listening around the world and you have zones comparable to zones 8 through 11, possibly 12 down in Key West, then what I talk about with flowers and growing will work there.
Yes, that is so interesting. Never even thought of it like that.
Yeah.
So.
Israel's on the map too as well. So it's the same kind of conditions.
Yes.
Where occasionally they get snow. We're talking about the Easter holiday now, but at Christmas time and in the winter, Israel experiences a little bit of snow, but they have the same temperatures as we do, kind of the same climate that we do. They don't get a lot of rain as us, but they're the same temperatures. So that's good. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680 if you would like to give us a call. And if you're on the road, safe travels and enjoy the holidays. I will be singing at Sunrise Services tomorrow. Tony will be playing guitar.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, we always enjoy. We have the mass is held outside, and we are on the lakefront. And it's really pitch black at 6 o'clock in the morning. Sunrise isn't till 7. And so as communion's going on, the sun is rising and the sun rises. And it's just beautiful.
It seems like it's going to be nice weather versus it being like really cold or anything.
It's going to be lovely weather in the morning. In the afternoon, we're going to have some rain. But we should be able to get some Easter egg hunts and roll away the stone in the morning, so no rain then. So what can you be doing in your landscape right now? Well, your grass may not be looking so good. Keep mowing it, and you can rake out some of the dead out of it. It's not thatch. It's just dead leaves from the winter time. And so you can start feeding your bahia, your Bermuda and St. Augustine lawns now. The month of April is time for feeding. But you want to wait on your centipede and zoysia lawns if they have not yet recovered up in North Florida yet. So you can wait till the end of the month, first part of April, to do that. You can also, just like I said, mow it to get rid of the grass clippings and the dead leaves. You want to mow zoysia lawns 2 to 3 inches, okay, depending on the variety. If you're cutting it more than 2 inches, that's not necessarily good, unless you're using a reel mower. That's R-E-E-L, and then it's very fine zoysia grass. So there are some varieties that do get cut low to about an inch and a half, but most varieties of zoysia grass is 2 to 3 inches. Just remember, scalping your lawn is not good, okay? What it does is the height of your blade, your grass blade, is the depth of your root system. And so when you have short blades and you're scalping it, then that creates that short root system, and that's going to need to be watered more often. Okay, it's going to put a stress on it, and it's going to be more susceptible to insects and disease issues. So you want to keep it at the right height, 2 to 3 inches for zoysia, 3 to 4 inches for St. Augustine lawns. Okay, and the higher your leaf, the deeper your root system. You want to adjust your sprinklers. So we can water twice a week. Now with the irrigations, it depends on where drought conditions. Some water management districts, you're still only allowed to water once a week. So don't get caught with fines. Make sure you contact your utility company and or your water management district office, and they will tell you how many times a week you're allowed to water. It should be between 1 and 2. We never, 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 never need to water more than 2 times a week. And when you do water, you can apply 3/4 of an inch each time, and that's all your turf needs. If you will do that during the springtime, by the time summer gets here, your turf has acclimated. So some people will tell me, Teresa, but when I stop watering the lawn so often, my lawn starts to wilt. And that's because you have a spoiled lawn. You have created this monster that needs to be watered. So when we have these cooler temperatures, and by cooler, I mean high 70s, low 80s, okay, because it's not going to be in the 90s like it is in the summertime, then this is the time to wean your turf off of irrigation. And so let it wilt, and then it's only going to be 1 to 2 days more, and you'll be able to water again. And this week, we're going to get rainfall. So if you don't turn the irrigation system on at all this week, then your lawn will become healthier. It'll push those roots down deeper. Trust me on that. All right.
Did you just call them bad lawn parents?
Yes, I did. Bad lawn parents. Your lawn is a problem because of your parenting skills. So you know, people think they want to, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, really, really, what are the parents that always say yes to everything a child wants?
Yes.
No discipline.
Correct.
Okay, so you're teaching your child to be spoiled.
Oh, yeah.
And that they deserve everything. Well, your grass doesn't deserve all that water.
Yes.
Okay, we don't need to waste it. That's potable drinking water. We want to conserve it as much as possible. And it's not because we're running out of water, because we'll always have the same amount of rainfall. We may not get it, drought years and things like that. But the rain goes up into the air and comes back down again.
Gotcha.
But when it comes back, it's no longer potable. We are running out of cheap water.
Mm.
Okay, water that we're going to have to desalinize, water that we're going to have to reclaim. That's more expensive than the good rain that we get from heaven above. And so what we're going to do here is, I don't have anybody on my...
Tom and Colette.
Tom and Colette, we're going to get to you in just a few minutes after this hard break. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, we'd love to hear from you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. Let's go to Tom in Merritt Island. Good morning, Tom. How can I help you?
Okay, so, I got hit with the cold weather like pretty much everybody else. And my avocado tree, which is a West Indian variety, the major branches are starting to grow back. But what I'm seeing is just a huge number of what would appear basically would be sucker growth. And I'm wondering whether I should, obviously, if I'm going to keep that going, I should trim the number of suckers, or should I trim the wood further back and hope that I get growth that's not suckers.
Okay, so how tall is it?
Oh, the tree is about over 20 feet tall.
Okay.
And it's frozen up. It's the unfrozen or the comeback areas are like up to about 12, 15 feet.
Yeah, so are you able to get up 20 feet tall, or I just don't want you to hurt yourself, or whether you have to bring in like an arborist or someone to cut it back? So,
well, I'll bring in someone to cut it back if I need to. My question really has to do with whether I trim the suckers or whether I cut it back below the suckers. That's the real question.
No, go ahead and cut the suckers off. How tall? How far up are the suckers? Are they coming from the ground, or are they coming from higher up?
Higher up as well, from the ground to higher up.
Okay, so cut everything that's like 6 feet down. If was it a tree or was it a shrub?
It's a tree over 20 feet.
Yeah, okay, so go ahead and cut the suckers from 6 foot down from the top of the start of the branching out. Cut everything down underneath it, and you can leave the ones up above 6 to 8 to 10 feet tall. You can leave those.
Oh, okay.
Okay, right. But cut the suckers off below the ground, because you don't want those branches starting.
And one more question,
sure.
Completely different topic, having to do with for cucumbers and watermelons and basically cucurbits in general, cucus, a squash, edible gourd. What's a good number of plants to have in a quote hill, unquote? I say quote because I don't have hills. I have depressions and deep mulch.
Okay, so you're asking how many to plant in on your property?
Yeah, how many to keep? I've already got them planted.
Oh, okay, super. How many to keep? I would say, as much as you can eat, what you're going to do with it. So, you're going to get 2 to 3, possibly 4 watermelons, per 1 or 2 plants. And then your cucumbers, too. It just, depends on how much you want to take care of and how much you want to eat.
Yeah, okay. So, really, what the question had was focused on the idea, four plants, although I have very rich soil, 4 plants in one spot too many, for instance.
How close are they together?
Well, they're within a 6-inch area.
Oh, 6-inch area? Yeah, you're going to want to spread them out more. I would put them at least 2 feet apart.
Well, they're already coming. They're already up, so I'm not going to do it. Really, it's a question of having to do with thinning them.
You can thin them and just, 1 to 2 feet separation from them.
I see. Okay. Well, I'll just thin it down to 2 per hill then.
There you go, hill. Okay, super. Thank you. I was thrown off by that. So let me know how you do. Okay.
Okay.
Great,
right.
Tom. Yeah, bye. I just didn't understand it. Let's go to Colette in Winter Haven. Good morning, Colette. How are you?
I'm good, Teresa. How are you?
I am great. I'm looking forward to Easter and ham and hunting for eggs.
Oh, good. While I was talking to Lizzie, you had actually started talking about what I was calling about, and that was watering the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
I just heard yesterday, we're in Winter Haven. We're actually in the county, but we're on Winter Haven City Water. And Southwest Water Management District has just put us under once-a-week restrictions, according to our address. And it has to be before 4 o'clock in the morning or after 8 o'clock at night. That's our only choice. And I don't have an irrigation system. So for half an acre, 3/4 of an acre, I'm the one that drags the hose and the sprinkler heads around. So I was just sharing my dismay over it. And
yeah, you're stressed.
Maybe some of your listeners haven't heard about it either.
Right.
Just to know that, yeah, and they're making us do it at night, which means we're going to be getting more fungus.
Yes. Yes and yes. So one, you can water just once a week all year round. So that's not an issue. Okay. So watering restrictions to twice a week is not bad because we only need to water once or twice a week anyway if we don't get rain. The good news is that we're starting, you know, to get some rain this month, but it's not necessarily going to be enough to get through everything. So I would say, do you have, so you don't have an irrigation system. Gosh, that's a tough one because it is a serious issue. We do need to conserve water. Florida, this is water conservation month.
Oh, I agree with that. Yeah.
But, So I would just say that it's lighter at night. So I would either do it in the morning because I don't want to wake up in the morning and do it before 5 o'clock. But after 8 o'clock.
Before 4 o'clock.
Done by 4 o'clock. So I would do, okay, so here's what you do. Okay, do not water leaves. Okay, I know the grass is, it's full of leaves. But if you water just enough, okay, and not overwater, you're not going to get as much fungus. Okay, so we have a little bit of ways to go before the real humidity hits. So right now you're okay, but the plants, shrubs, and trees, do not water the leaves. Just water the roots. Only roots absorb the water. That's going to help you in not getting a lot of fungus issues for shrubs and trees. If you're only watering your lawn once a week at 8 o'clock at night, then you're not going to really have that much of a fungal problem, okay? So it's a pain in the butt, but it's something we need to do. And so the overwatering and then doing it at night is kind of like, you know, compounding the problem. Okay, so if you're only doing it once a week and not overwatering it, then the ground is going to dry off before 9, 10 o'clock. It's not going to stay wet all night long. If it's at 4 o'clock in the morning, that's a little early. I don't want to get up then. So I would just wait and do it at 8 o'clock. Do it at 8 o'clock.
And I've only got one hose on a timer. Maybe I need to get some more timers.
That may be your solution right there, Colette. Thank you so much for calling in. Happy Easter. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you are in the garden area, we'd love to hear from you. 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680 and you can give us a call. What can you be doing in your yard? Let's follow up on that. You want to rake and use the leaves. You know, oak trees drop their leaves twice a year, so they are still dropping their leaves, and we still have a lot of damage. Trees and that are still dropping leaves and have the brown leaves. So you want to rake them up off of your lawn so your lawn gets nice, good sunshine and can start to recover faster. You also want to make sure that you are trimming your plants at a proper time. So many times, and you can see it right now while the azaleas are blooming, that you have a landscape maintenance crew that will just trim every month. And that's not good. It's not good for azaleas. It's not good for gardenias. It's not good for hydrangeas or camellias. You want to cut your spring blooming shrubs after they finish blooming, which is azaleas. Azaleas and camellias, once they finish blooming after the winter time is over and early spring, then you cut them then. If they're cutting them every month, that's why you're seeing the azaleas only bloom on the inside and not the entire plant. Also, too, your ligustrums, you want to make sure when you're pruning that you're pruning not necessarily straight. but at a slight angle, 45 degrees. And I was so pleased. I have a client, we renovated their landscape, and she had a taller shrub hedge of ligustrums, and they were very bare. They have that, what I call bare bottom syndrome. They're very full at the top, but you can see right through the bottom, and there's no leaves on the bottom. And that's because the hedges are trimmed straight. If you will make the top of the hedge just slightly smaller than the bottom of the hedge at a slight angle, then it will get the bottom will get as much sunlight as the top, and it will become fuller and thicker, and it will be healthier. Trimming it straight each time is not good. And so you just want to make sure that you're trimming it correctly, trimming it at the right time of the year. And that way you'll have flowers when you're supposed to have flowers, and you'll have nice, healthy bushes. Let's go to Jerry in Citrus. Good morning, Jerry. Happy Easter to you.
Good morning, Teresa. Happy Easter to you. I have a question on the goji berry.
Okay.
You helped me getting it started, you know, and it's growing nicely. And I got one in the ground and a couple in pots. And the one in the ground is growing really quick, fast, and it's getting larger leaves now.
Okay.
Small leaves on the stem, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what that means. And will that do it in pots like that too?
It should. It depends on how big your pots are. So it's growing faster in the ground because it has plenty of root space. And the roots are getting bigger, and that's increasing the size of your leaves. When they're in pots, they don't have that root system room available, that area to grow in, so the tree will remain smaller. How big is your pot that the goji berry is in?
I got it in 1 gallon and 3 gallon, and the one I had planted out was in a 1 gallon, but it took off.
Right.
You know, like you wouldn't believe. And does that indicate that it's going to bloom or produce berries?
That doesn't indicate that it's going to produce berries, but it indicates it loves where it is and it's going to thrive. And so you want to fertilize it on a regular basis. And so I would put, do you have any bigger pots, like a 5 or 7 gallon pot?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have some that are at least 7 gallon, maybe 10.
Okay, 10. I would put your goji berries in that if you want to keep them in pots. And let them grow, and they will start to thrive there. And just fertilize them on a regular basis.
Okay, that's good. When would you expect them to bear?
Well, they're going to start to flower soon. So they're going to they bloom in the mid-spring, early summertime. And so once they're happy, once they get to that cycle where they've got the roots spread out, when did you plant it in the ground?
A couple of months ago, because it took the freezes.
Okay.
Even in the pots.
Good.
It took the freezes, no detriment at all.
I would say that you're probably going to see flowers in the next 6 weeks, but make sure you're fertilizing. Oh. Okay?
I will.
And let me know.
I'll do what you say there, because I'll get those little ones growing then.
Yeah, just put them in a bigger pot, make sure they're getting watered on a regular basis.
Okay, Lizzie. Teresa, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm the redhead. There you go, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. So always at the base, okay, so here's when we're having issues with plants, when I'm going and diagnosing plants, it's either a watering problem, it is a root problem, or it is some type of issue that they over-fertilizing chemical issues. You know, so it's one of those three areas. Air circulation is a little bit of it. And so you want to make sure that your root systems are nice and healthy and have room to grow, especially a fruit tree. And so goji berries are just a really pretty little tree. And if he puts Jerry puts it in a 10-gallon pot, then it's going to kick off too. Now, when I was at the Epcot International Flower Festival, they showed beautiful bonsais that had been growing in their pots for 25, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they were 55 to 60-year-old plants. Now, that short bonsai planter, they have to take it out of that planter and very carefully keep the roots small to stunt that shrub, bush, or tree into staying small, and it takes a lot of effort to keep it cut properly, also to make sure it's getting enough water. And so it's a very fine art, and these were just beautiful. I'll post some of the pictures of the bonsai on Better Lawns and Gardens.
That's crazy. And, yeah. How tall would they get if you just took one and planted one in the ground somewhere?
Well, if you planted, okay, so they had bougainvilleas, and bougainvilleas get 40 feet tall. Mm-hmm. They had regular flowering trees and podocarpus and oak trees
that were bonsai, though.
Yeah, it was just beautiful.
Like, naturally, I wonder how tall it would get if it had just been put, not...
It would
no
just
nipping,
grow to,
no
yeah,
nothing.
It would grow to its normal size.
Which is?
Oak tree?
No. Bonsai.
The bonsai are all different varieties of trees. And so the bonsai is a gardening technique. So bonsai means small.
Okay.
And it's also, too, it relates to being rugged. Have you ever seen, in Maine, on the coastline, when you're on the beach and you turn up and look at the rocks, and there's a little small tree growing in the rocks, and you're going, oh, my goodness. And it doesn't have any root system, so it's kind of scraggly. It only has a few branches, but it's thriving. It's going to live there forever. That's kind of a bonsai. That's what it means in Japanese, is to kind of keep it really, really tight and not a deep root system.
Okay. Space.
So, bonsai is just wonderful. And you can do that to any plant, junipers and things like that. So I love to do that. This is the time of the year to go ahead and cut your poinsettias back by a third and give them water and fertilizer. Let them go. If you have not in the springtime yet reapplied your mulch, go ahead and do that. The mulch is very important to keeping the ground cool, keeping weeds out. You need at least 3 inches of mulch to prevent sunlight from getting in to germinate those weeds. But if you have mulch down, you don't need to keep adding those 3 to 4 inches every year. You want it to stay level with the ground or the curb, wherever the sidewalk, wherever your plant is growing. So you may only have to add a half inch of mulch to bring it back up to the 3 inches, because that mulch decomposes and turns into dirt. And, you know, that's what plants eat, really. So your palm trees need special feeding this time of year. You want to use fertilizers that's made for palms and use it on a consistent basis every 3 to 4 months. This is the time of the year to divide your perennials, like your amaryllis, once they finish blooming. And then also, if you have water gardens, you can transplant and feed water lilies and bog plants. So then also hurry up and get your tomatoes and peppers and eggplants in the ground.
Mine's already producing. Holy cheese and crackers. I'm so excited.
Very good. Very good. So we want to thank everybody who called in and listened. I know it's Easter weekend and it's very calm, and you're heading out on the road there. You want to be driving safe. We do appreciate you listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, whether it's on podcast or live each week. We do appreciate you. And we just want to say happy Passover and happy Easter to all our friends and family out there. And our listeners, you are so great to come out and see us when we go out to special events and to call in. And we just love that you are part of our family.
Exactly. We're very grateful for you guys. So thank you.
And so where can they hear Better Lawns and Gardens if they missed any of the first show, which is all about Easter lilies?
You can go to betterlawns.com. That's betterlawns.com.
If it's Saturday morning from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.